Old Testament, and I was talking to T.A. Maybe Wednesday night or before, and he said, I don't even have time to keep up with my daily Bible reading. And that's not the first time I've heard that statement made, T.A. When you start doing a chronological study of the Bible, and you get to sections like we are right now in the Old Testament, it requires a great deal of study and reading at home. And you people are to be commended for your efforts in so doing. For example, we said that when we started 1 and 2 Samuel and 1 and 2 Kings, we had to look at 1 and 2 Chronicles because it fit right in with it and carried along the same line of thought, much like reading the Gospels in the New Testament, Matthew, Mark, Luke, and John. Then when you consider the fact that a great deal of the Psalms was written by David and other men that lived during David's lifetime, during that same span of time, you can really get into a lot of reading. And it really pushes us to really concentrate and think about where we are. Remember, if you will, we looked at four Psalms. We've already looked at two of them. We'll look at the third one this morning and tonight in Psalms 110. Then on Wednesday night, we'll begin Psalms 132. That'll kind of complete the Psalm. But we're kind of getting a tad behind with David and his life as the second king of Israel. So I thought it good this morning in Bible class, we'll start in 2 Samuel chapter 8. And then we'll try to look also at the same time span in the Chronicles. But let's begin first of all in 2 Samuel chapter 8. And what you're going to notice when you get into the 8th chapter of the book of 2 Samuel, David has just completed getting the Ark of the Covenant back in Jerusalem. He's already asked Nathan to approach God about him building a permanent structure for the Ark of the Covenant, the temple. And Nathan, first of all, tells him, yes, go do it. God's with you. He's blessed you. But then he has to go back and tell David, says, no, we're going to have to put this on hold until Solomon's time. Because Jehovah God has said that you shed too much blood. And it's going to be done in Solomon's time. And then he goes on to say through Nathan to tell David that he's going to bless David tremendously. No, he's not going to be permitted to actually build the temple. But after David's death, Nathan tells David when his body has been placed in the tomb, there's going to be one that would come from his loins that would sit on his throne, and he would sit and reign on his throne in his kingdom forever. It would be an everlasting situation. And David was just, he lost control of himself. He goes and he begins to speak and pray to God. He just don't understand why he, a sinner like he is, would be chosen for such a great blessing and honor as this. All of this has come to a completion. And when we pick up in chapter 8, it begins to go over and name some countries that while all this was going on, David is battling against. Remember, if you will, when the children of Israel, under the leadership of Joshua and Caleb, took the children of Israel across the Jordan into the land of Canaan, the land flowing with milk and honey, they were instructed to go to war against and destroy all the nations that were living in the land of Canaan or around the land of Canaan. They didn't do this. So David now is having to clean up after several generations of God's people that did not do their job. Notice, if you will, some of the countries that he mentions in chapter 8. He mentions Moab. It said in verse 2, he smote the Moabs. In verse 1, he smote the Philistines. In verse 3, he smote the king of Zobiah, which would include the Syrians. Notice, if you will, he drops down to verse 14 and talked about how that he had put garrisons in Edom. Now, what are we talking about when we're talking about garrisons?
Like a fort or a building where soldiers are housed?
Yes. In other words, he has transplanted some of his army, some of his soldiers, to some of these countries that have been causing him problems. If you'll remember, that's exactly what Rome did during the days of Jesus. To keep the Jews under control, they kept one uprising right after the other. That's what led the Roman government to put garrisons in Judea and Jerusalem, but it also led them to appoint people that would rule and govern the land like they wanted it governed, Rome. And that's what David's doing right here. Now notice, if you will, you leave chapter 8 and you begin chapter 9. You can kind of see maybe David is possibly got some time on his hand. And he's thinking about bygone days. And he thinks about Saul and his family and his friendship, no doubt, with Jonathan that was killed in battle. And he raises the question in verse 1 of chapter 9. Is there yet any that is left of the house of Saul that I may show him kindness for Jonathan's sake? Anybody read far enough ahead to know what's going to take place?
Saul's son is going to reign, and David's going to reign also.
Okay, all right. Notice, if you will, he learns in verse 3, Jonathan hath yet a son. Anything specific about this son? He was crippled. He had gone through an accident as a baby, and evidently never overcame that accident. He couldn't walk. And notice, if you will, it mentions his name in verse 6. Mephibosheth, the son of Jonathan, the son of Saul, was coming to David and fell at his face and did reverence. And David said, Mephibosheth, and he answered, Behold thy servant. And David said, Fear not, for I will surely show thee kindness for Jonathan thy father's sake, and will restore thee all the land of Saul thy father, and thou shalt eat bread at my table continually. So notice, if you will, that's quite a blessing. You see, one of the things that was characteristic of this day and time, when you went in and you did battle, you took the spoil. Don't know exactly what happened to Saul's inheritance. his land when he and his two sons were killed in battle. But we know now that it was going to be turned back over to Jonathan's son.
This would be his personal property?
Yes.
Not his kingdom.
Yes, personal property. Yes. He's going to give it back to him. So he calls his servant in, and he gives him the instructions. He says, look, we're fixing to give Mephibosheth Saul's personal property back. And I want you and your sons to work that land. Mephibosheth's going to live with me. He's going to eat at my table as long as he lives. And when you gather the crops, you bring them to Mephibosheth. So that tells you some of the feelings that he has for Jonathan. You close out chapter 9 and you get into chapter 10. And it begins talking about some of the country around that had shown kindness to David. And one of those places was Ammon, the Ammonites, and especially the king of Ammon. Well, he passed away. He died, and his son had taken over. And David is thinking, well, you know, his daddy was really good to me, showed me favor. And I want to show my appreciation for what his dad did. And he took his servants, took his servants, and he sent them up to this young king to take some gifts and to give thanks and congratulate him on becoming the next king over Ammon. Anybody remember what happened?
They thought they were spies. The people that went to comfort him or whatever, and
how do you treat him?
Shaved half their beards and ripped their clothes.
They shaved half of their beard off. I don't know what that significance was, but what would you think if Mike and Russell come in one morning and they just had half a beard? Think what's been going on this past week, man? Y'all, it was a signal of shame. Not only that, but they cut their breeches off right below their buttocks. And they were so ashamed they wouldn't even go back to David. And they stop at Jericho, and word gets to David, and David said, you just stay in Jericho till your beard grows out. And then come on back home. Boy, that upsets David. So he starts gathering his troops together, and he's going to head up to Ammon, to the Ammonites, and they hear about it. Well, they go and hire the Syrians. And they hire so many of their chariots and so many of their armed warriors, so they were going to combine with them to be able to protect themselves against David. Well, David sends Joab and Abishai, his brother, up to battle against these forces. And they sit down and they make them a game plan. Here's how we're going to approach this. One of us, we're going against the Ammonites, and the other one, you're going against Syria. And if we need to split off and join to help one another, we'll be close enough. You can send some troops our way, or we can send one your way. it worked. Because they basically destroyed the Ammonites, and the Syrians left in fear of what was happening in the battle. And notice, if you will, it talks about in verse 18 of chapter 10, the Syrians fled before Israel, and David slew the men of 700 chariots of the Syrians, 40,000 horsemen, and smote Shobak, the captain of their host, who died there. And when all the kings that were servants of Hadasharah saw that they were smitten before Israel, they made peace with Israel and served them. You see the consequences of losing the battle? Look at all the countries we just named in these two chapters. David had control of those countries now. They were serving him. Now, what that serving meant, we don't necessarily know. But I know it meant taxing them, using their wealth, their riches, to help the Israelites as a nation of God's people. Now, things were rolling along pretty good. David was successful now. He had captured most of the people that were at war against him and had won. Remember, he made one serious mistake in moving the Ark of the Covenant. What mistake was that?
Didn't move it correctly.
He what?
He didn't move it correctly.
He did not move it correctly. Why do you think that he did not move it correctly?
Because that's the way it came to him.
That's the way it came to him, and he didn't spend the time to even look at what the scriptures say. We're going to move it like it was moved in the past. Boy, how many religions are like that today? They never stop to think, does the Bible authorize this? Or do we just do that just because we've always done it that way? Mama did it that way, Daddy did it that way, my aunt and uncle did it that way. And this is just a religion that this has been our family religion from generation to generation. And they never stop to look, what does the Bible say? Well, David learned a hard lesson. You better know what the Bible says before you're engaging and doing God's work. Because when God says something, He means it. David's about to make serious mistake number two. A few chapters, he's going to make it again the third time. Anybody remember what the second big mistake was? Everything was going so well. Pardon?
His involvement with Bathsheba.
Yes. His second mistake was he saw a naked woman taking a bath on a roof. And it didn't stop there. You see, her husband was out in David's army. He sends for Bathsheba. She conceives. A child is born. And how does David deal with this problem?
Calls her husband back and tries to get him to go into his wife.
All right, he takes Joab and he says, send him right in the heart of that. But before you do that, I want you to give him a few days off. he goes back home, but he does not go in his house. He sleeps on the front porch. And David finds out about it. He said, "What's going on? Why did?" And the response was, "My men are out there fighting while I'm taking a few days off with my family. No, I'm not going to do that." See, that really messed up David's plans. Because, you see, he could have denied his paternal rights to this child. That didn't work. So then he sends him in the heat of the battle and gets him killed. And everything is just rolling right along. Nathan goes to him. And he tells a story of a rich man and a poor man. The rich man had a flock of sheep. And the poor man had one lamb that he kept in his house as a pet. He got ready to have a big feast, the rich man did. He goes and he gets the poor man's lamb, kills him, dresses him, serves him at the feast. Nathan goes to David and says, What should we do with this man? David said, "We need to kill him. We need to put him to death." Nathan said, "David, you're the man. You are exactly the man I'm talking about. This is what you did to your friend who was fighting for you, at battle with you, serving in your army. This is what you've done." Yes?
You wonder how David could have been so blind. I just can't even get my head right now. After all he's been through and seen, and how could he do this?
Isn't it amazing how that when things are going so well, Satan is able to capture our weakest moments? Just like with the Ark of the Covenant, David did not rely upon the Word of God. He relied upon himself, and he failed, and he got a man killed. The second time, with everything going beautifully, the success he was having, but there was something about this woman, and Satan knew how to use it to Satan's advantage, not God's advantage. Does anybody remember how the birth of this child wound up?
The child died.
Pardon?
The child died.
David understood this because he was told by inspiration, the child's not going to live. Sure enough, the child got sick. And David went into mourning. He wouldn't eat, he wouldn't drink, wouldn't take a bath, wouldn't get out of the pub. And then the child died. David gets up, takes his bath, changes his clothes, begins to eat and go back, and it just really paralyzed the people. They just couldn't understand. Why would he just all of a sudden get up and go back to eating? What was David's thinking on that?
Have God's sympathy.
Okay. Anything else?
He said, "I can't bring my child back to me, but I don't know the child."
Yes, and he goes back even further than that. He says, you know, while the child was sick, while I had it in my grasp, I was just hoping and praying that God would change his mind and allow him to live. But once he passed from this life out into eternity, he said it was out of my control. But you see how deeply he understood the resurrection of the dead. He said, I cannot bring him back, but I'm going to see him again. And this time it's not going to be for just a short few months. I'm going to spend eternity with this child. You see what a faith does and a hope has as opposed to no hope? And then, of course, as David's life goes on, of all that happened, of all the sons that David had, he said, one of these boys is going to reign on my throne when I'm gone. When they place my body in my tomb, one of my sons. Now we're going to learn, for some reason, that God really loved Solomon. Now who was Solomon?
Bathsheba's son.
Bathsheba and David's second son. The first son passed away. The second son, God chose. Not David, not Bathsheba, not anybody else from David's family, but God said, just like God said, Saul's going to be my first king. David, a man after my own heart, is going to be the second king. And Solomon, a son that is going to reign in a peaceful environment. He's not going to have to go to war like his daddy. He's not going to shed blood like his daddy. He's going to serve and be the son that I am going to allow to build David's temple, that I'm going to allow to sit on David's throne, and this throne and this kingdom is going to be an everlasting kingdom. Now, notice, if you will, that brings us to about chapter 12 in 2 Samuel. And you're going to notice in chapter 13, we're going to talk about another son by the name of Absalom. Can't go there this morning. We don't have time. But if you will, turn over to 1 Chronicles, chapter 18. 1 Chronicles, chapter 18. Notice, if you will, it begins to talk about, just like it did in 2 Samuel, about the countries that David was victorious over. Verse 1 of chapter 18, the Philistines. Verse 2, Moab. Verse 3, Zobiah. Verse 5, the Syrians. And notice, if you will, it kind of fills in some details. As he was taking these countries, he was gathering the spoil. And look what he took. Verse 4. David took 1,000 chariots, 7,000 horsemen, and 20,000 footmen. He also hewed all the chariot horses, but reserved of them 100 chariots. Verses 7, 8, 9. He took the shields of gold. He took much brass, much silver. And we're going to notice as he begins to collect this brass, silver, and gold, he begins to store it up. What's he going to store it up for?
To build the temple.
You see, he still got it in his mind. No, I can't literally build it with my hands. But I can help my future son, who we're going to learn is Solomon. I can help him by using these materials. I can dedicate it in verse 11. The king dedicated unto the Lord the silver, the gold that he brought out of Edom, and from Moab, and from Ammon, and from the Philistines, and from the Amalekites, and the Edomites. David reigned over all Israel and executed justice among his people. Now notice, if you will, you start into chapter 19. Same story about what happened to these servants that went up to visit the new king. And we learn in verse 5 that he told them to wait in Jericho until their beards grew out. And then they could come back home. And it tells and gives us a little bit more detail about he went to battle against the Syrians and the Ammonites, and gives you some instructions as to how he did it. Then in chapter 20. It talks about taking the crown of the king off of his head, weighed out a talent of gold and the precious stones, and David took it and put it on his head to really signify the facts that I've been victorious. Then we learn also in this section of the Chronicles, we did not get this from 2 Samuel, you see. If we had just passed over it, we might have missed it. He had to go to battle against the giants again. They killed Goliath's brother, who had some sons. And what was peculiar about one of these sons of this giant? And extra fingers on each hand and extra toes on each foot. And evidently he was huge. Now, in chapter 21 of 1 Chronicles, we didn't see, what have we not seen, what have we not heard anything about in this section?
Satan.
No. Not Satan. What have we not read one word about?
Numbering.
Pardon?
Numbering.
Okay.
Bathsheba.
That's it. Not one word has been spoken about Bathsheba. We get into chapter 21. And we see where mistake number 3 comes in on David. Now we're not going to have time to really catch all of this. But he decides that he's going to number all the children of Israel. And he makes the exact same mistake again that he made moving the Ark of the Covenant. He tells Joab, he said, Joab, you need to go number all these people. Joab said, David, this is a bad, bad thing. Why was it bad, you think? God did not authorize the numbering of the people at this time. God did not authorized. Just like he did not authorize the way David moved the car.
But you wouldn't think just counting the people wouldn't make a difference, Steve.
I didn't think there was a law against it.
It wasn't a law against it, but there was a law as to when they were to be numbered. And David did it out of harmony with the way it was to be done. And Gad now, the prophet, we've been dealing with Nathan the prophet, now we're dealing with Gad. Gad goes to him and he said, David, God told me to come talk to you. And he says, you've got three choices, David. What you did was wrong. It was sinful. And you've got a choice to make. Here's your punishment. And he says that he decided two of the choices was in the hands of men. You can spend so many years and allow these same people that you just whipped to be victorious over that. The last choice of three items, he said, or you can allow God to bring a judgment on Israel. David quickly thinks. He said, the last thing I want to do is fall back into the hands of my enemies. I would much prefer to take my punishment from Jehovah God. You know, as much as I love you folks and appreciate you folks, I'm so thankful that I'm going to stand before my Lord, not one of y'all, at the judgment.
Oh, ain't that the truth?
And he's going to be my judge. That's kind of David's thinking here. You know, I'll take my chances against Jehovah God. And as these plagues begin to hit, David has gone to a place called Nacon's threshing floor. It's on the hillside of Jerusalem. And David just stops and he sees all this happening and he's telling God. He said, God, look, these people, they're innocent. I did this. I made this choice. Take it out on me personally. Don't take it out on these people anymore. And God calls the death angel to remove and back away off of this judgment. He makes a statement here, and we'll end at this. He tries to buy the threshing floor from Nacon, and Nacon said, oh no, King, it's yours. David said, I would not offer to Jehovah God that which cost me nothing. He said, Nacon, I can't take it under those circumstances. Because you see, he was there to offer sacrifices to God. God accepted this, and guess what this was going to be? It was going to be the location of the temple that his son Solomon was to build. So you see, in spite of David being a sinful person, he was a man after God's own heart. When he was convicted of his sins, he repented of it, took his punishment, owned his sin, and relied on God to be a merciful, righteous God. Now, chapter 21, verse 1 tells you again, David, that might help us to see what happened to Bathsheba. Look here in verse 21:1. Satan stood up Against who? David. David had his hand in, I mean Satan had his hand in. Isn't that really true of sin in general? You know, we're always going to be at battle against Satan. And when we think we're doing so good, and we're making so much progress, and everything is going quite lovely, guess who we can expect to interfere? So we cannot ever let down our guard against the wiles of the devil. We'll pick up in Psalms 132 on Wednesday night, conclude that fourth psalm that we were going to look at as we've looked at. Now remember what we said. Some things we saw in Chronicles we did not see in Samuel. Some things we saw in Samuel we did not see in Chronicles. You see the need